The speaker that I've got for today is this lady that I just dearly love. And she's a real worker around AA, and we go to some meetings together, and I just always love when we're together. And I'm going to call on Jerry to come up now.
Okay, my name is Jerry Johnson, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jerry.
And I've been sober since April 24th, 1993.
Yay!
And I'm so grateful for that. And I am a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sober 8,996 days. I'm a day counter. I still count my days, and I'm so grateful for everyone. And I didn't become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous until June of 1996. So that's like a 3-year gap. So I'm going to be talking about that. So first of all, I'll say, I'm not going to talk about my childhood. It was really good, so there's it's kind of boringly good. I had my first drink when I was 15 and a half, and I can remember to this day the way it smelled, the way it tasted, the way it burned, and the way I felt afterwards. I felt great. I loved it. I wanted more, and it became my mission in life to get more. And before that, I thought I was perfectly happy with my life. I had good parents, I was doing well in school, I belonged to tons of clubs and activities in school. Everything was just wonderful. But after I had that first drink, everything that was wonderful in my life was no longer wonderful. It didn't fill the bill for me. I became dissatisfied with everything in life except alcohol. So I began, of course, rebelling against my parents, which I know lots of teenagers do, but I dropped out of every single activity I was in school. I maintained my grades fit enough not to get in trouble for that. And not to have anybody start hassling me about that. But my whole goal in life after that was just to drink. And that was hard at that young age, but I found different ways to do it. And we didn't have liquor stores. We had state liquor stores. And so I got a driver's license, and they were, this is how old I am, they were on kind of thick paper, like cardstock, and typed with a typewriter. So I erased the date and put it in a typewriter and typed over it. You couldn't tell. No, you really could tell that it had been tampered with. But it worked anyway. And I remember the first time I went with a group of kids in a car, and I was designated as a person to go in and buy the booze, and I went in, and there were all these bottles, and so I came out and I said, "What do I buy?" Because there are all these brands and stuff, and they said, "Buy the cheapest one." So I go back in. You know the people in the store are seeing all this, but they sold it to me anyway, and so that was great. And that's how. So that's how I like to drink, and I preferred hard liquor. I started out on gin and vodka, and moved on to bourbon and rum. Those were my four favorites. but I would drink beer or wine if there wasn't anything else around. Anyway, I immediately started falling down drunk. I didn't ease into my alcoholism. I went straight into falling down drunk. And I say that because I found myself on the floor, face down, many times. And I assumed that I failed to get there. I might have actually gotten down. I don't know, because I couldn't remember. But I remember lying down like that and thinking, this is just great. I felt so wonderful. And so the idea that being partially paralyzed or was immobile on the floor was good. That's how delusional I was. I thought it was great, and I thought, as soon as I can get up, I'm going to drink some more. And even in high school, my friends were telling me, my drinking buddies were telling me, you've had enough tonight, you need to stop, and all that. So when your drinking buddies are telling you that at 15, 16, 17, you might have a problem. So I remember at least one time, my girlfriend's saying, you need to get in the shower. They put me in a cold shower to sober me up. And I let them do it, and I laughed through the whole thing because I thought, as soon as I get out, I'm going to drink some more. I don't care if they put me in a cold shower. And that's kind of how I went. And drinking was wonderful for me. I loved it. I felt wonderful. And I had very few outside consequences. The worst outside consequence I had were like two-day hangovers where my hair down to my toenails hurt. That's the worst thing that I can remember happening to me. I didn't get picked up by the police. I didn't. I was able to connive and lie to my parents enough not to get in trouble with them. I was staying okay in school, so I never lost a job. I don't know, all the outside things that I hear people hear about in the rooms, I never had. So when I think about it now, is how in the world did a person like me, who was so delusional, who had no outside counsel, how did she get sober? It's like nothing short of a miracle that God could get a person like me sober. So what happened, I drank for 31 years like that. And I didn't drink every day, but every day I could, I drank. And I drank that way. I drank to get drunk. Now, I really just wanted to get a little bit drunk, like they talk about in country western songs. I hear that as I remember a little bit drunk, but I always way overshot the mark. I wanted to get a little bit more little drunk. And so and I don't know. It's even now I look back and think it wasn't that bad. So what I have to remember, what AA has helped me remember, is the way I felt inside. That's where I had real consequences. I was empty and lonely and terrified and hopeless. And I can remember. I can remember the party ending and the booze running out and everybody falling asleep or passing out, and I'm just about to do that. And I'm feeling that way inside as a teenager and thinking, how was I so happy 2 minutes ago and now I'm so scared and empty and lonely? It was terrifying to feel that way. I never had an answer for that. Go to sleep, pass out, I don't know, and wake up the next day and face it. But the only time I was really at peace was when I was drinking. And that went on for 31 years. So I don't know how I functioned in life. I got married. I did eventually get a job. I kept the job. I had kids. I don't know how I survived, how I went through that. But my sole aim was always to get away. I had to get away from my husband and kids to drink. Before it was my parents. So I'm always wanting to get away from somebody to go drink like I want to. And I would take my kids camping with me. I got involved in this group of people that like to camp and drink. I just wanted to camp and drink. I didn't want to do any fooling around, which we know goes on. So I would take a kid with me as a protection. I thought if I had a kid in my tent, no guy would bother me. And I thought it was so clever to think of that. And it was only 2 or 3 years ago that it hit me, the danger that I put my kids in, because I was in no shape to protect them. And as far as I know, nothing bad happened to them. But my memory is that I sort of drank control until they went to sleep, and then I drank with abandon. But I know I was in no shape, even before they went to sleep, to have protected them if anything happened. And so I'm still having some realizations like that come back, even recently. This was like 3 years ago I remembered this, of things that I did that were harmful to my family. I thought I didn't hurt anybody. I didn't get in trouble. I didn't, you know, I just thought it was only me, only a hangover. That's the worst I had. I'm 46 years old, and one of my children is getting into drugs and alcohol. And I can remember thinking, maybe if my husband and I stopped drinking, maybe that my helper. And but I thought, you know, I could do it. I could stop drinking. I had done it once before. For 2 years I'd stopped drinking, but then I started again. And was worse than ever. So I knew I could do it. But I thought, it's not really fair to my husband. He really enjoys his beer. And he shouldn't have to quit because of my daughter's problem. So I was very thoughtful like that. So you can see how delusional I am. I was, and I still am, I think, sometimes. I didn't even mention it to him. But then we happened to get into a group of parents whose kids were all in trouble like that, and they all quit drinking. And so I was sort of forced by peer pressure, I felt, to stop drinking. So I decided to stop drinking for my daughter, not for me, for her. And so things went along pretty well for a while. I actually began to start to get a connection with God. I joined another 12-step program, Codependence Anonymous. And I went to one meeting a week, and I got a sponsor, and I worked the steps as I had time to work them, as was convenient for me. But I did work all of them, and I began to get a connection with God. But nothing like I really needed. And life got even better on the outside for me. And I thought I was perfectly happy and content. And I don't remember being troubled by the obsession to drink for a couple years. But then my youngest child was getting ready to leave home. And I had a thought that, maybe now I could have a glass of wine with friends at dinner. And I didn't even like wine, but that was the thought. And my thoughts progressed from that glass of wine to feeling like I have to go get a bottle of rum with a handle on it. I thought that, for years and years, I thought that was a quart. But it's really a half gallon. And that just scares me so much to think. But that's what I was buying at the end, was half gallons of rum. And I like to think, I don't really remember, I couldn't possibly have drank all that in a day. I mean, I would start early in the day, so anyway, I'm still in denial about that problem. I know I got awful, awful drunk doing that. And I went a couple years not drinking, it seemed okay, and life seemed better. And then once I had that thought and it jumped to that obsession to drink, I didn't have it 24/7, or I would have drank in the first 24 hours, I know. It would hit me every once in a while and last maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes. I don't really recall that much. but it would hit and I'd have a feeling, I have to go get that bottle of rum. And it scared me to death. And then it would pass and I would have a sense of relief, that's gone, but it kept happening. And I could never figure out what made it start, what made it stop, when the next one was going to be. But after a while, after about a year of that, I knew deep down that I was going to give in to that. And for some reason that I don't know, I didn't want to drink. I had stopped for my daughter. She's moved out. But I don't want to drink now for some reason. And I'm scared I'm going to. And I knew about AA. And I actually read the big book so I could understand my daughter. Isn't that sneaky of God to do that? My God has to be sneaky with me, I think. So I knew about AA, and I even knew about open and closed meetings, so I went to an open big book meeting because I thought, I like the big book, and I'll go to that. And so I went to this meeting. And before that, I will say this. I had a friend who just happened to be an AA and a drug and alcohol counselor. And I mentioned to her this feeling that I had, this compulsion to go buy a bottle of rum. And she said to me, "Sounds like you need a meeting." And so that's why I decided to go to AA. Now, I didn't think she thought I was an alcoholic. I just thought she thought a meeting would help me. So that's why I went. And I thought AA meetings were maybe a third wider than this and back a little bit more to include the smoking room, and that they were completely dark and smoky, and I could stand in the back and absorb sobriety. That's what I thought I would go to. And I went to this Friday night meeting, big book, open big book, and there was only one guy in there. He was the chairperson. He's setting up the chairs and fixing the coffee and putting the readings out and all this kind of stuff. And we won't have a meeting with just two people. And he starts the meeting and he gives me how it works to read. And, so I said, then this couple comes in, so there's four of us, these two guys and this woman and me. And they start the meeting. It's a big book study. It's an hour and a half long meeting. And we read a chapter, two wives, which, probably wouldn't have mattered what they read. Anyway, they all share, and then they look at me, and I say, I'm Jerry. I'm not an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink in 3 years. I've just been wanting one and thought I would come to an AA meeting. And they didn't laugh like you guys are doing, but they were very polite. except that the woman crosstalked, and we all know that's wrong, but I am so grateful that she did, because she said to me, "I think you might be an alcoholic." And she didn't tell me why. And I hadn't told her anything. I told her I wasn't drinking. I'd just been wanting to. I didn't tell her how long I drank, what I drank, what happened when I drank, any of that kind of stuff. And I wondered what gave her the clue that I might be an alcoholic. I know now. It's the obsession of the mind. So she began to tell me about her drinking and how she was delusional and how she didn't think she was and how she came to know that she was an alcoholic. And so much of her story related to me. And so I went home with that. And then the two guys had to say they thought I might be an alcoholic too. And they ganged up on me. Anyway, I went home with that knowledge. And there's a line in the 12 and 12 about once in step one, about once the true nature of our malady is planted in our mind, we can never be the same, and I could never be the same after that. So I wrestled with that idea if I was an alcoholic or not for another 3 weeks or so. And I decided I'll read the big book again and see if I can identify. Well, of course I couldn't. I saw all the differences when I did that. So I go back to that meeting and I try to tell them why I'm not an alcoholic. And they saw me and say, we told you what we thought last week. We don't want to argue with you. Whatever you decide is just fine. Well, you know, if I can't convince them that I'm not an alcoholic, what? So anyway, I could not decide if I was or I wasn't an alcoholic. And it was driving me crazy up here. But in one of those meetings, one of the people shared about praying and asking God for direction. And I asked God after that meeting, help me know if I'm an alcoholic or not. And I had great relief because now it's God's problem. I don't have to try to decide anymore. I don't know where I got that, but I did. And I thought it was going to take a long time for God to let me know if I was an alcoholic or not, because really he hadn't answered any of my other prayers. But he actually answered it the next day. He had some memories come back of something I read in the big book and related to an incident for me. My daughter, who had gotten sober, had actually gone back out, and I knew it. And I thought, how do I know that? Because she's acting like I would if I went back drinking. I don't know. So that was one clue. And there was another clue. And I don't know if those were from God or not, but it seemed like it. And so I admitted that I was an alcoholic. Actually, I called that woman, and she invited me over for dinner. Her husband was there, and I think her sponsor, they're talking AA like we do. And they gave me a set of questions that are printed in a pamphlet called The Memo to an Inmate. Now, it wasn't in the pamphlet. Somebody had taken the questions out, because I wouldn't have read that, because I wasn't arrested or go to jail or prison. I wouldn't have read a pamphlet to an inmate. But somebody had taken those questions out. It's 20 questions. And this is not what's in the pamphlet, but the questions were all in the pamphlet. But at the bottom it said, if you answer one of these questions, yes, you might be an alcoholic. If you answer two, yes, you probably are an alcoholic. And I think if you answer three or more, you definitely are an alcoholic. It was pretty specific. The pamphlet is not that specific. Anyway, I read that, and so I started answering the questions. And I had 8 guesses before I finished, and I had lied on some of the questions. So I don't know why I had to go to 8. But I finally said, okay, I'm an alcoholic. And I felt wonderful relief at first, and then I felt this awful anger. Now, I haven't picked up a drink, but I just remember feeling angry. I think now, looking back, I was angry because I couldn't drink anymore. As long as I wasn't an alcoholic or thought I wasn't an alcoholic and not drinking, I could drink again. But I knew deep down inside I can't drink again. I just knew it. I don't know how I knew it. Particularly as delusional as I was, that's a miracle that God got that truth through to me. But I definitely felt that way. And I started going to AA. But AA, you know, I kept going to AA, but people in AA were telling me to do more than I wanted to do in AA. They wanted me to go to more meetings than I wanted to go to. They even suggested going to 90 meetings in 90 days. Now, I know now that is not in the big book, and I don't have to do that. but I didn't know that then. And I fought against that for about 30 days, about a month. It was the worst month of my life. Really, when I look, it was just horrible. Nothing bad happened on the outside, but inside, I'm feeling worse and worse. I'm becoming more and more angry. Nothing or no person or thing is on the outside is making me angry, but I'm becoming full of rage, actually. And I think it's now because I knew I couldn't drink, and because I didn't want to do all this stuff. And it just got worse and worse for me. I would get that compulsion to drink in the middle of an AA meeting, and I thought, that is just wrong. I should be safe in an AA meeting from those kinds of thoughts. And it got worse and worse. And finally, after about a month of that, I was driving home to my apartment, and I was full of rage. I wanted to drink so bad, and I felt like I could kill somebody. And I remember being in the car thinking, if I had a gun — I've never shot a gun or held, I don't do that — if I had a gun, I'd shoot anybody that was right in front of me, just randomly. It's like, that was a scary thought to me, on top of wanting to drink so bad. And I went home. I did get home without drinking or killing anybody. And I got on my knees for the first time in my life. I'd heard about that in AA. I got on my knees and I told God, I'll do anything you want me to. I'll do all this AA stuff, all this stuff I don't want to do. I'll even go to 90 meetings in 90 days if you'll just help me. And I got up from there, and I haven't had that compulsion to drink since that moment. And I haven't wanted to kill anybody since then. And I didn't realize all that was gone, because, like I told you, that compulsion, that feeling that I had to drink, would come and go. And it was about 6 weeks later I realized I haven't had that anymore. And I did my part. I know a lot of times we say, God, get me out of this jam and I'll never do it again. But that's not what I said. I'll do anything you want me to do. And I jumped into Alcoholics Anonymous after that. Now, I was not a happy camper, Renee. I grumbled to God the whole time about everything I did. Every meeting I went to, I grumbled to God about. And I would say, when these 90 days are up, I'm never going to this meeting again. And I said about every single meeting I went to. But I kept going. And at the end of 90 days, if you had said, Jerry, you have to stop going to one of the meetings you've been going to, I don't know which one I would have picked. Somewhere in that 90 days, I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know when it happened or how it happened. All I did was go to meetings and grumble to God. And He somehow changed the way I felt. And so that's been my experience about so much in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've done so many things in AA that I haven't wanted to do, that I've grumbled to God about. And I'm always blessed by doing it. And then I go, God, how can you bless me when I have such a bad attitude? I will say this, my attitude generally has improved over the years. I love Alcoholics Anonymous now. I even love to go to service committee meetings, group conscience meetings. I'm kind of a weird, sick AA member. I love everything about AA. I love the people about AA. And that's definitely not how I felt when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, I started going to meet, and then I got a sponsor. I heard you have to have a sponsor, and so that was my mission, to get a sponsor. So I'd go to meetings and look around the room for a woman I thought who might say yes. And I found a few. Well, the first half dozen I asked said no, and they didn't even give me a reason. And, you know, I briefly had the thought, like, what's wrong with me that people won't say yes? And then I thought, doesn't matter, I got to get a sponsor. So I got about half a dozen sponsors after that who did say yes. And there's a point to this. they, for one reason or another, they would stop sponsoring me. I didn't really ask them not to. A couple of them drank, and a couple of them said, I'm going through a tough time now, so why don't you find somebody else to help you while I'm going through this tough time? Anyway, they all kind of, for one reason or another, didn't work out. And then I prayed about it. I asked God, who would you like me to ask to be my sponsor? And I got a wonderful woman who took me through the steps. Now, one of these other women had taken me through the steps. The point I'm trying to make, a couple points, I guess, is ask God. Don't try to get a sponsor or do anything on your own right, usually. I shouldn't tell you what to do. I'm sorry. I'm trying to not practice that. My experience is that when I ask God for direction, things work out well. And when I try to do things off, even good things on my own, I fall flat on my face. That's what the point. And the other thing is I hear a lot of people say, I've had great sponsorship, and that I had some pretty bad sponsorship at first, and I stayed sober anyway. So it's God that keeps me sober. And the thing that I did while I was going through those half dozen sponsors is I was in the book all the time. I went to lots of meetings. There were other people who came into AA at the same time. We talked AA all the time. And if my friend's sponsor told them to read something in the big book, I would read that. They said that my sponsor said do this, I would do that. I did everything my sponsor said and everything your sponsor said. I just was trying to do it all. I didn't know what was in the big book. I didn't know what was AA, but I was willing to do anything to stay sober, even if I didn't like doing it. So where am I? So I did finally get this sponsor, and I did work the steps, and they made a huge difference in my life. I was one of these alcoholics who came into AA, and I would hear people talk about being selfish and self-centered, and thankfully I didn't say this out loud, but I thought, not me, I'm a kind, loving alcoholic. And then I worked step 4 and 5. And I had my eyes open and realized how selfishness and self-centeredness definitely is the root of my troubles. Which was a good thing, because then I could work with God on that. And I did that. And I did work through the steps pretty hard and fast when I finally got this sponsor. I was scared to death that if I didn't do it, I was going to die. I wasn't really happy about some of the things, some of the steps in here. But I was more afraid of drinking than I was of doing anything in AA that I thought God wanted me to do. And so I did a lot of things out of fear of drinking initially. And sometimes that, you know, will still keep me sober today. But really, it feels so good doing this stuff. I think that's, I'm addicted to feeling good now. All that feeling good that alcohol used to give me, AA gives me, and it goes on and on. I only felt good when I was drinking alcohol. The rest of the time, when I wasn't drinking, I didn't feel good. But AA goes on and on. It just I can come to this meeting and go home, and the feeling continues. Whether I'm in a meeting or whatever. So I love that about AA. And there's some other point I'm trying to make. Anyway, so I did that. And so it was in the steps that I really found out about my defects of character. And I'll tell you this. When we got to step 6 and 7, I read that. So I wrote down my defects and how I was going to get rid of them. And I go to meet with my sponsor. And I'm like, 2 or 3 things down the list when I realized, oh, it's 7, you're supposed to humbly ask God to remove these. And it hit me, I'm not supposed to work on these myself and figure out how to remove them. And I wish I had thought of it before I'd said that to my sponsor, but I didn't. Anyway, very often I would go in thinking, I got this step down, I'll just talk to her about it, but I always got something else about it. She always brought something new to me about it. And I have always worked with a sponsor since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sober in San Diego, and they said a lot of times in the meeting, call your sponsor every day, and I took that to heart, so I called my sponsor every day, sometimes multiple times in the day, and that may be why some of those women quit working with me. I've always stayed close to my sponsor, and the thing that I got most out of sponsors that I've worked with, I had several, but one in San Diego and a couple here in San Antonio, is I learn as much by their example as I do by anything they've ever told me. And I watch people, not just my sponsors, but I watch other people, and I learn so much about what they do and think, I never thought about doing something that nice or kind. Maybe I'll try that. I raised so much about AA that and how great life is, and I'm happy all the time. I can't remember my last bad day and all that kind of stuff. But I have a lot of bad stuff that's happened that in my life. It seems bad if you look at it on the outside. I've had a lot of family troubles recently, difficulties that are my family is going through that are hard to watch, that are scary and sad. But I just go straight to God with that. I keep going straight to God. And while all that's going on, I have this tremendous joy in my life. I don't know how that is, that I can have bad things happening to people I love, and I can feel joy at the same time. It's not that I don't feel the sadness or the fear, but God relieves me greatly of those things and gives me that joy. And it's from doing what I read in the big book, what I've been taught to do in the big book. I've been taught to do fear inventories. On page 68, there's three paragraphs in there. I've been taught to read, write, and pray those. And every time I do that, whatever fear I have, I commence to get relief from it. And I've done it, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of times, with big little fears and big fears, I've gone to God. And I always at the beginning, I think, this fear can't be relieved. And in three short paragraphs, praying, reading, and writing them, at the end, I have great relief. And sometimes the fear comes back, and I just go back and repeat it. But sometimes it's left, and it's never come back. So those are some of the tools that I use. The other big problem I have, and probably the biggest problem I had when I first came here, was anger. I was separated at the time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had 22 general resentments against my husband with lots of specifics. So you can imagine the anger that was in me. And working this program has really greatly relieved me of all that anger. It wasn't just one inventory on him. I had to do many inventories. But every inventory, I got more and more relief from the anger against him. And that's all I wanted, was relief from the resentment. But God gave me compassion for him. And I wasn't expecting that. I didn't ask for it, and he gave it to me anyway. And I'm so grateful for that. I pray for him every day. We never got back together. And that was something. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to not drink. I didn't come for compassion. I never expected that. And that's what God's given me. And I started asking him for kindness and compassion for people. And I started getting it. But recently, in the last 2 months or so, I started thanking God ahead of time. I thank God for keeping me sober today. I thank him for giving me knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry it out. I thank him for giving me kindness and compassion. I've changed all my requests to God for things like that into thank yous, and it's made a tremendous difference in my prayer life, in my morning meditation, and it's an exciting. So for me, this program is always a daily adventure. One of the things I do is I write down in the morning my plans for the day, and then I say, okay, God, what are your plans for me? And, you know, he's free to add or delete or change, whatever. And then at night, in my review, I go through that. And it's so exciting to me to see what he does with my day. The things that sometimes it's the same, but, you know, like going to a meeting or something. I'll have that down. But what happens at the meeting is really exciting. And then sometimes he changes it. And that's marvelous. it's just exciting. It's such an adventure to me. But the real adventure is what happens inside of me. And it's almost daily that God changes me a little bit. It's almost like how I heard people talk about having a little knob inside, like a dimmer switch. And, you know, God keeps turning it a little bit more light for me, a little bit better, and that keeps going up. I had a change this morning in my heart when I was praying and meditating this morning about something that's going on, not, you know, here. It's just, I don't know how God does that. All I do is pray, read, write, and God keeps changing me inside. And that's the real joy for me. The other thing I want to talk about is getting into service. I was never very much interested in helping other people. Never really crossed my mind before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But early in AA, there was an old guy, probably my age, read this statement out of the 12 and 12 in the foreword about how the 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which if followed as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink. And you could have ended it right there, and that's all I wanted. But it goes on, and enable the sufferer, that's me, to become happily and usefully whole. And I always wanted happily, but I never thought about useful. What I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is that when God uses me, I'm happy. I don't know how it works, but that's what brings me the greatest happiness. And I'm very aware when I'm helping someone that it's not me, it's God. And it's just so exciting when that happens, to watch other people begin to get a connection with God and to stay sober. And the service that I'm currently in now is with corrections. And that's nothing I ever thought I'd ever do. I never went to jail or prison. What do I have to offer? Just never thought about it. But I wound up hanging out with people that went, and I guess it's kind of contagious, and I wound up going the first time, and I love going now. I'm probably at my happiest when I'm in an AA meeting in a jail or prison. And that's my big service now. I don't know. I don't really make a very good point about things. I don't know what the point of my story. All I can say is that AA works, that it's kept me sober, not only sober, but it's kept me useful and happy. And the thing that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is to trust God, clean house, and help others. Thank you.